WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, where students can conduct NASA research, produce an original play, or join an in-house marketing agency as early as their freshman year. More information is available at carthage.edu. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. For part one of today's morning show, we're going to be previewing one of the most wonderful events in southeastern Wisconsin, one that all kinds of people look forward to year after year after year, the Racine Starving Artists Fair, an event which did not happen last year thanks to the COVID-19 pandemic, but which is back, although in a new location. We're going to be speaking today on the morning show, first of all, with Jane Herring, who is, of course, a much-connected person here at WGTD. Her early days at WGTD actually predate mine. And there's not many people we can say that about.
Are you saying I'm older than you now? Yeah, I guess it's true.
As far as WGTD is concerned, when I came to WGTD in 1986, Jane was one of our news directors. And Jane departed Gateway, then returned to Gateway for many, many years. And Jane is the coordinator for this year's Racine Starving Artists Fair, and is a very capable stained glass artist herself, by the way. Also with us in the studio is Jill Castillo, who is the president of the Racine Art Guild, under the auspices of which the Starving Artists Fair occurs. And so I'm so happy to say that the Racine Starving Artists Fair is back this coming Sunday, the 1st of August, 9 to 4, on the grounds of the DeCoven Center. And I'm so glad that Jane and Jill can be with us in the studios to talk about this wonderful event and also give us some sense of all the work that goes into making it happen year after year after year. Jane Herring, Jill Castillo, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Morning.
Glad that you can both be here. So before we talk about this year's fair coming up this Sunday, let's talk about last year's fair, the fair that almost was, but ultimately wasn't. So, Jane, that was to have been the first fair that you coordinated. Take us through kind of the timeline of what happened in 2021 in terms of the event being on and then ultimately off.
In 2020, Jill hired me, and we got rolling in January, where we started to recruit for artists because we have 110 artist booths, and that was going great. We had wonderful artists, both continuing from the show in the past as well as new artists, and then we had to make a decision in May to cancel because of the pandemic. So there's a lot of time spent in returning their booth fees and, you know, thanking people for their enthusiasm about the fair and hoping they'd be back this year. And that certainly is happening.
Can you take us inside that decision? And Jill, maybe you have something to offer there as well. I mean, was that a difficult decision after long discussion, or was it, in a sense, an inescapable decision that was more or less imposed on you?
Well, it was imposed on us, and it's something we struggled with, as everyone who was hosting an event, or we kept hoping, as everyone did, that, oh, this is all going to go away soon. So we held on for as long as we could, and then, yes, the inevitable happened. We had to cancel, as did everyone else in Racine, have to cancel their events. So disappointing, but here we are this year, back and strong.
So another, I guess, the one thing I wanted to clarify is you could not have put on the fair even if you had wanted to. In other words,
exactly.
It was,
yes.
I mean,
that's between correct. The city of Racine restrictions about COVID and hosting public events, and that, you know, came down from the CDC, but also Gateway Technical College, where we were located for decades, they have, of course, had fabulous regulations to keep their students and faculty safe and make sure that everything moves forward. But that also meant, you know, fat chance of getting onto the campus because they really were not having any kind of general public coming in. You know, the renters who used to use their indoor facilities, no. It was an easy choice because we had no choice.
Right, yes, a clear choice. And so some of the planning that went in, of course, just kind of goes by the wayside. So, and of course, it was disappointing because the one thing people hoped was certain things that are outside, perhaps those could still happen, even though so many things that were indoors, of course, were canceled. And of course, it was determined that even outdoor events, when we're talking about so many people and in relatively close proximity, it just wasn't a safe thing to do.
Yeah. Well, and Jill and I struggled in the early spring months because it still was not clear what sort of restrictions would be lifted. And the city of Racine did not allow any public use. I think it was a very strong restriction that no more than 200 people in an entire day for the event is how it was explained to us. So we were like, oh boy, you know, what are we going to do? But that's where it came together with DeKoven Center. And Jill had been working on a potential event there and could see the potential of having our event there. And of course, you know, the grounds are gorgeous. But they tell us that they really have not ever hosted a large public event before. So I think we'll be there first.
Wow.
We're excited about that.
Absolutely. We're talking about the Racine Starving Artists Fair, which is coming up this Sunday, August 1st. And this year, for the first time in at least collective recent memory, it is going to be on the grounds of the DeKoven Center, 621st Street in Racine. And it is indeed a breathtakingly beautiful grounds on which this Starving Artists Fair will occur. Jane, you were telling me before we went on the air that actually due to construction on the Racine Gateway campus, that's really as much as anything why it cannot be where it has normally been.
Exactly. Anybody who has driven past our campus on our, I haven't got past that, the Gateway campus on Main Street will see that the fenced area keeps expanding. It is a wonderful project, but it would have taken about a quarter of our show space. And from a safety standpoint, Gateway Technical College's approach to it was, again, nothing on the grounds. And you know, understandable,
sure.
Especially when you see it now. Months ago, you're, what's the problem? But now we get it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is going to be, in a sense, a very happy turn of events to have you hosting this event now at DeKoven, although we'll talk in a moment about the amount of work that's involved in sort of sorting out where to be exactly and where to put the artists, no small feat. Before we get to the Starving Artists Fair, Jill Castillo, you're here as president of the Racine Artists Guild, which is the sponsoring organization, of course, for the Starving Artists Fair. Give us a little background on the long history of this event and your connection with it.
Well, 57 or 58 years ago, they started the Racine Art Guild, a small group, decided to hold an art event in order to raise some money for sponsors, for scholarships. And it started in Court and Dick Hardware parking lot. And they did that for several years. And then about 40 plus years ago, they moved it to the Gateway Park campus on Main Street. And it has evolved. It started at, you know, small idea, and it just grew and grew and grew. And because of that, we are able to give scholarships every year to art students that are from Racine County. We went from giving a small amount to $1,000 for scholarships a year from Racine. I would say, made a mistake there, from UW-Milwaukee, Carthage, MIAD, Milwaukee Art School, and Parkside, UW-Parkside. And so if you've been living in Racine County or Racine and are going to school, you are eligible to put in for this scholarship.
And so this art fair, the money raised is what funds these scholarships.
That is correct,
yes.
And also the fund that we're building is for community art, too. So we go into Cops and Kids, John the 23rd. We work with Yorkville Elementary. We donate art items to different schools that might be in need. So our mission is to bring art to the community and to the people of Racine. And this is how we do it. So it mostly is for the scholarships, but it's also a funding way of getting money to do all these other little things that we love to bring art. We had just recently been given the opportunity through Judge Weber in Racine. He is in City Hall Annex courtroom, and he was tired of looking at the photos, large photos of judges that were on the walls. And it is a multicultural amount of people that come into his courtroom. And so he decided, this is crazy. Why should they be looking at white people on the wall of old men? And he decided he needed some color in that room. And he just gave us the opportunity to bring art to that room. And we had a little reception on Friday, but it looks wonderful. And our artists jumped in and painted some wonderful paintings for the room. So we like to jump in everywhere and bring color to people's lives.
Wonderful. For those of you just joining us, I have in the studios of WGTD today Jill Castillo, who is president of the Racine Art Guild, and Jane Herring, who is the coordinator of this year's Starving Artists Fair, which this year is on the grounds of the DeCoven Center, and that the event is coming up this Sunday, the 1st of August, 9 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. So, Jane, first of all, for someone who's not been to this fair before, explain why it's called the Starving Artists Fair.
Well, I will try to do that, but it really is because we're trying to give artists the opportunity. This is a juried art fair. It's not an art and craft fair. And I think that that's an interesting distinction because I've organized art and craft fairs as a juried fair. Every one of the artists who is in the show has been juried. Some of them had been juried in last year, the year that wasn't, or had been in 2019's show. But over half of our artists are new and had been juried in. So that really brings a level of quality art. And it also is such a wide variety of media that we're able to bring to people. I kind of went through and did some numbers on that. Because a lot of people think all these shows, all they do is jewelry. Well, that's not the case in this one. We have 25 artists who are painting and drawing, and they're all over the map, from digital artists to people who do pencil sketchings with a little bit of water. They do paintings, and then they use resin as part of it. It's such a wide variety of even just painting and drawing. We have 7 woodworking artists, 5 glass artists, again, 3 different types, woodworking, 4 or 5 different types of woodworking. And yes, we do have 15 jewelers, but again, the variety is really there. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really what we bring to the public. We bring local and regional artists to the community in such a broad spectrum of art, and it's reasonable. I guess that's where the starving part comes in, at under $300. No piece can exceed that. So really, it's very fortunate for the buyer to come in and find top class art from regional artists for not that much money.
Right. I was reading on the website that something like two-thirds or nearly two-thirds of the artists who are represented at the Starving Artist Fair, at least in the past, have been from Racine County.
Yes, but that actually has been turning around because we are actively seeking artists from the entire region. And this year, yes, 25% of our 110 artists are coming from Racine County and 11% in Kenosha County, but 57% are coming from Wisconsin communities that are outside those two counties.
Wow.
So we have people from way up north and out west, the whole nine yards. We also have 7% coming up from Illinois. So I think the numbers have really broadened thanks to what my predecessors have done and what we have been doing this year as far as trying. And a lot of it is word of mouth. Our artists might go to a show someplace else and then say, oh, you really should try the Racine Starving Artist Fair. They have great crowds.
And they make money. And that's... You know, $300 and under, if you look at juried art, you'll often won't find prices like that. And it's $300 might even be scary because a lot of it is between $10 and $100.
Right.
And it's all affordable. And people come even if they don't want to buy something because they can look at wonderful things and stroll the grounds overlooking Lake Michigan.
And there's food.
It's a beautiful sight. Yeah. And we have
food.
Food and music.
People like food.
And kids things. Yeah. So, you know, it's wonderful. But I have to say that past artists that have been there enjoy it because they do make the money and that they're treated well. And it's always, Gateway's always been a perfect place, you know, a beautiful place to have it. And I know that Decoven, everyone will enjoy it.
Right.
It's a
nice shade
place.
And the beautiful. I've been looking at the weather only, you know, one of those things
yes.
I don't want to know. But, I mean, there's supposed to be gorgeous breezes off Lake Michigan, which,
yes.
So it's not going to be
no
the
storms,
95
right.
humidity.
No, it should be a beautiful day. And yes, it certainly makes a difference if an art fair is run well. I mean, that means so much to the artists who participate. And most artists have participated in enough art fairs that are kind of lackadaisical when it comes to the details, and it's no fun to bring your things and show them in a setting that is not effective and where details are not being paid attention to. And this event, for a long time, has had a really strong reputation among artists, so it's no wonder that they are clamoring to be part of it.
Well, we have a good team, I have to say that.
That's great.
Definitely.
You know,
headed by Jane, and we just have some great people that have hung in for years to be on the Starving Artist team.
Jane, can you just say a word about the process of by which people, this jurying process, because it is an important distinction that it isn't just somebody fills out a check with a registration fee and they get to show their stuff. It is not as simple a matter as that. What are you looking for in this jurying process?
Well, we have 10 really wonderful artists who are members of the Racine Art Guild, and they have agreed to do this. Many have done it for years. We have one or two fairly new jurors, but some are our retired art teachers. They represent, again, all art types. So you might have painters, you have ceramic artists. So you have a variety, and I think that's important because that's what you get. And then what happens is the artist fills out an online application. We give them an artist number. They are directed to upload 6 to 10 images of their work into a Google Drive folder. And then once that's done, we forward that out to the jury. They yay or nay it and often give reasons why, which is very educational to me, I have to say. I've enjoyed that part of it. And then we invite the artist to join us or say, sorry, this is very fine work, but it's doesn't fit the fine art structure that this fair has long been known for and the quality. I mean, they might be quality crafts, but not artisan craft.
Right. This is original artwork, every single piece that's on sale at this event.
Right. It needs to be, because if you're sitting next to an artist that isn't, it's disappointing to that artist that put hours and hours worth of work into their art. So we want to make sure, we kind of police that a little bit and make sure that they bring what they said they were going to bring. So we want to make sure that we're displaying what we said we were going to do.
Very good.
I know from being an artist in shows, it's been interesting because the biggest complaint you hear is, They didn't make that. They just bought this and put it together. And that's really what the jurors are looking for.
Right, to make sure it's original artwork.
Yes, correct.
In every way. Jane, you were saying before we went on the air, or gave a little hint as to the huge job it has been for you and whoever you're working with in terms of figuring out where everybody's going to go on the campus of DeKalb, because, of course, being on the Racine campus of Gateway for years and years and years, that sort of X format of with the various booths was all set out. And this is something, of course, brand new. So just talk about the challenge of sort of sorting out where people go and how much space they get and so on.
Well, in the larger overview, Jill and I went out there quite a few times. Plus, there are restrictions. Obviously, DeKalb is so well known for their wonderful weddings. So we couldn't use that part, but we could use everything else.
I have to say that my grandson and his fiancé are going to get married there next July, just case. A little plug for DeKalb.
It is a you know, one of those things that if you could get married again, that would be a good place. But yeah, it's where do you put the food? Where do you put the porta potties? What's the flow? And then once you do that big overview, then it gets down to where do 110 booths fit, and walkways. The one thing that's a little different from previous shows is the walkways are going to be on grass because it's grassy. It's also beautifully tree lined. I'm one of those tree hugger types. I wanted to kick some of these trees. I will admit it, because they're like smack in the middle of something. But it's going to be such a beautiful setting. But you know, I was out there with two tape measures, one that was 10 feet long for the width and one that's 15 feet long for the frontage on each of them. And, you know, you just do every last inch of the grounds.
Does every artist get the same space?
Exactly
the same.
Yes. And what's a little different this year, and if you don't mind me zooming off into COVID just a touch, again, as we were starting this measuring process, you know, will 110 booths fit here? Okay. So then we had to look at, will there be social distancing? How much social distancing? Will, you know, So they pay for a 12 by 10 booth, with the 12 being the frontage. We are giving them each 15 because we weren't really sure, but we're asking them to just use the middle 12 so that they're, if you think about it, then there's 6 feet between them and the next booth, which does help enforce social distancing. Mm-hmm. We're also giving them a sign that says something along the lines of, please observe social distancing, but feel free to embrace my art. You know, because, you know, we're trying to be friendly. It's not like, meh, away. But, you know, people have to understand. And, you know, the hand sanitizer, of course, and all of those types of things.
Well, I just wanted to interject that it may look simple at Gateway that we've done it, you know, 50 some times. But what you do have to get out there is walk it and mark it every year.
And even at Gateway.
Oh, they might put in a new bush. They might put in a new bench.
So widen the tree cover.
So it's a Saturday thing, and you have to go out and you have to number each and every spot. With DeKalb, it's going to take a lot longer. We're using a bigger area, and we have to do the center of, you know, 10 by 12 and then 15. And so Jane has done a wonderful job by walking that up
quite
a few times.
We will find out, won't we, Jill?
Yes. Well, you might get fired. Who knows?
Yes!
Well, I can't imagine what a big job it would be, but it's also an exciting opportunity to, in a sense, kind of reshape the art fair, which to start with was wonderful. But in some ways, it will perhaps be an even more beautiful event. Do you have any idea how many people typically come to the Starving Artist Fair? I mean, it's obviously not a ticketed event.
No.
And so I'm sure there isn't exactly a gateway through which everybody passes and is counted. But do you have at least a rough idea?
Well, they've tried to do that. We always say it's 2,000 to 3,000. But it all depends on the year, the weather. You know, it could range from 1,500 to 2,500.
Or even 4,000. There
are some
great
years that it's been almost 4,000. So we've tried to gauge it as people come and go, but it's a lot. And we're hoping that happens again this year.
Hmm. Is there something magic about the number 110?
Because that's what that's a gateway.
Right.
It used to be more. And that's 110 art vendors.
Yes.
But we also have other things that have to fit into the park.
Sure, the kids' corner and the food vendors. And,
and the boutique and the silent auction and raffle.
And the raffle, yes, boutique.
Musicians.
Musicians, food, kids. Yeah, lots of stuff. And we have some nonprofits that are going to be in this year. So I would say about 10 to 15 others, well, with the food. It's even more. Yeah. So there's
a lot to cram
into the... So 110 artists plus.
Right.
Yes.
So I guess it made sense to kind of leave the number as it was. I mean, it was a number that worked at Gateway.
Yes.
And once you're all done with this year's fair, you can decide, was that a good number or should it be higher or should it be lower? But
It seemed manageable. And, you know, with, you know, there's things like parking and transportation. Mm. Our artists are being given access to a remote lot so we can get them away from the street parking. Mm. And Jill has arranged for a shuttle to get the artists to and from that area, which is fabulous because we really want to leave as many of the street parking spots available for our guests.
Of course. Absolutely. So, again, the Racine Starving Artist Fair is coming up this Sunday, the 1st of August, 9 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. So I remember in the many times I got to interview Jo Nissen about this event, she would talk about showing up crack of dawn on Sunday to start the coffee.
Yeah, I think she still will.
Still doing it. God bless her.
Wow. So, and then but it is early Sunday morning that the artists arrive, and I suppose you're there before even the artists arrive to help welcome them and direct them.
Well, from what I hear from my predecessor, she would get there at 5:30, and there's always one or two who would be there.
Wow. And Jane's made all the artists aware of their numbers, their location. She sent them out a map. So I have known that there's been one or two that sometimes bring their van and sleep in the parking lot the night before. They just want to get in there right away.
Wow. Very good. We've just briefly mentioned, and we don't have a whole lot of time, but we have talked about the fact that there's food. Can you just give people a sense of just what kind of food is going to be available on Sunday?
Yeah, we'll have a food court with some wonderful different kinds of food this year. One is a food truck called Meat on the Street. A lot of people have seen that before, but they have Filipino food, meat kebabs, garlic rice, and quite a nice selection. And then every year during the Starving Artist Fair, the Armenian church in Racine always had a large festival.
Oh, St. Mesrob.
St. Mesrob's. Yeah. And they are not able to do that because the festival site is not offered this year. So they are having a tent, and they will be selling some wonderful Armenian foods. We're all about tacos, pink tacos, which gives 10% to Cancer Society. Oh. They are making gourmet tacos. And because I did have just recently one of our food trucks had to drop out due to an emergency. So Gourmet Tacos may also be offering hot dogs. And a new one that someone that Jane knew, Pastry for You. She'll have some sweet treats for us. And Cowboy Kettle Corn, who is at all the Sendix stores, and he's at every place all over Milwaukee. So he's a big treat because he rings his bell. If you've been there, you've heard this big clanging, yes. Come and get it. And then this year, we haven't been able to do this on the park in Racine. DeKoven Center is having their own tent, and they're offering beverages, wine and beer, which is new for us, and then some other soda and water and things.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wow. So, and we want to remind people, of course, that there's a fun kids' corner where children can do different events. There's live music. There's a silent auction that also helps in the fundraising activities. And many of the artists, I think, donate pieces that are part of that silent auction.
That's true, yes. They donate to that. And at the raffle, it's Racine Art Guild members who donate. So, and then there's the boutique, which is made up of Racine Art Guild members who don't want to have their own tent, but they have any number of things for sale in the boutique, which is pretty cool.
That's real nice.
Well, I have to say, this is one of the summertime events that my wife Kathy and I look forward to as much as any, and we even have a couple of out-of-town relatives who will make their way, one of them all the way from St. Louis many times, just to be at this event because it is so wonderfully put together. And this year, of course, promises to be especially exciting because of this new location at the DeKoven Center, which is 621st Street towards the very south end of Racine and perched right there on beautiful Lake Michigan. The event is Sunday, August 1st, 9 to 4, and it does look like a lovely weather forecast, at least for the most part. Sunny and 76. Can't ask for anything better than that. And two of the people very much hard at work to make this happen, this year's Racine Starving Artist Fair, Jill Castillo, president of the Racine Art Guild, and Jane Herring, coordinator of the event. And Jane, what's the website address if people want to get more information?
It's RAGUILD.com, RacineArtGuild.com.
Yeah, it's a lovely, lovely website. And
it's the whole word, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I was just thinking.
RacineArtGuild.com. Yeah. And then we also have the Racine Art Guild Facebook page and Starving Artist Fair, Racine Starving Artist Fair Facebook page.
Excellent.
And the Facebook pages are great because they feature a lot of the artwork that's going to be shown.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Also the musicians, the student musicians that we'll be playing all through the fair. So.
Yeah, very good. Well, thank you for joining us for this first part of the morning show to talk about this wonderful event. We hope a lot of people will seek it out. Jill Castillo and Jane Herring, thank you so much.
Thank you, Greg.
Here's part two of today's morning show on WGTD. In this portion of the morning show, we celebrate soup. And isn't it a beautiful kind of food? Soup is something around which we gather sometimes when we need so-called comfort food in the worst way. Soup is often what we turn to when there are wonderful leftover ingredients that are just waiting to be combined in intriguing ways. And soup is often a way in which we can gather with friends, gather with family, and share soups, combine soups, and have wonderful times together in a way that maybe is not quite possible with any other kind of food. There's something very special about soup, and it is celebrated in a beautiful way in a new book called Soup Night: Recipes for Creating Community Around a Pot of Soup. The author is from Portland, Oregon, Maggie Stuckey, author of The Bountiful Container. And she knows a great deal about gardening, about delicious foods, and a great deal about soup. And in fact, this book is not only a collection of all kinds of wonderful soup recipes, but also a collection of stories about various groups around the country who are engaging in soup nights in which soup is shared and enjoyed together in all kinds of different settings. And I'm very excited to be able to speak with Maggie Stuckey for a few minutes about her book, again called Soup Night. Maggie Stuckey, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you.
I'm really, really happy to talk to you. I want to mention that I was in Portland, Oregon, your hometown, well, not where you're originally from, but where you live now, for the
very first time within the last year, and I was so impressed. It was wonderful to be to Portland after finally having heard so much about it. And
was it raining?
It rained a little bit, but part of
that's what everybody knows about Portland, that it rains all the time.
Well, you are a gardener of some renown, so you probably appreciate the moisture to some extent.
We do.
So you have had some interesting experiences with soup yourself, and at some point you obviously were inspired to write a whole book about soup. Tell us where you got the idea of devoting this kind of time and space specifically to soup.
Well, I was invited to a soup night here in my hometown.
Is that a Stanton Street soup night?
It is, yes. It's the block where my brother and his family live. And my niece, Meg, just happened to mention it in passing. I said, hold on, back up a second, tell me about soup night. And what she was describing sounded so wonderful, I got myself invited. And the first time I went there, I was so enchanted by what they have done on this one block. Everybody on the whole block, both sides of the street, corner to corner, gets together once a month for soup, and they have created an amazing community out of people who in the normal course of events probably wouldn't form any particular bond, because it's a highly urban setting with all the different demographic constituencies that you can imagine in a big city, and people who wouldn't maybe normally become good friends, they have, because they get together once a month with the deliberate intention to get to know each other and to be a really close neighborhood. Because they do this, there's something about, you touched on this yourself in the beginning, Greg, something about sitting down and sharing a meal with people you don't know or don't know well that just moves the whole experience to something else. And they have, it's absolutely wonderful. It's so amazing. You can kind of stand on the sidewalk and feel it in the air that there's something really special there. So after I spent some time with them and watched how wonderful this all is and how very cool it is and how much fun they have together, I thought maybe it would be interesting to see if I could find a couple of other groups in other parts of the country. And without very much trouble, I found 30 of them, including one in Milwaukee, by the way, that do with the same general yearning to live in an area where neighbors know each other and help each other out and take care of each other. They amazingly enough hit upon the very same idea of how to accomplish that, which is somebody said, well, let's have a big pot of soup and get everybody together.
I noticed when you described the Stanton Street soup nights specifically, and I think you maybe even used this phrase as you described it, but I love it. I want to use it again.
Okay.
That every single person, corner to corner on both sides of the street, is invited.
Yes.
I mean, this is intended to be that inclusive. I'm just curious, in the case of the Stanton Street soup nights, does just about everybody come? I mean, it's certainly important that everybody is invited. In fact, does just about everybody come, usually?
Yes, just about everybody. There are a couple of families who don't usually attend, but they're always invited because the hope is that someday they will come. There are a couple of families that have very young children, and so it's not always possible for them to do, but almost everybody comes all the time. In fact, Greg, it happens like this. If they get another invitation, they'll say, oh, I'm sorry, we can't do that. It's soup night, and we never miss it.
So as you went about looking for other such examples of soup nights, it sounds like you were happily surprised that you easily became aware of so many others. It would seem to indicate that a fair number of people across the country are engaged in something at least roughly similar to this lovely tradition in this neighborhood in Portland.
I was happily surprised. What surprised me was that without talking to each other, because, you know, they don't know each other exists, that, number one, they all had the same feeling that they didn't want to live among strangers. They wanted to live where neighbors knew each other. But when they thought about how they would go about accomplishing that, they all came up with the same idea. And it speaks to the power of soup, which is so simple. It's easy to create. It's warm and nourishing. It's the ultimate comfort food. I mean, didn't we all love chicken noodle soup when we were sick as a kid? That instantly made us feel better when Mom came in with that. Even now, soup makes us feel good in so many ways.
Mm. I want to touch on a couple of things that are in a list that I just love in Chapter 1, which is called The Glory of Soup.
Okay.
And so you mention all kinds of things, including the fact that particularly if we want it to be, soup can be very, very healthy, can be very, very inexpensive. And there are other things that you said about soup that I think are worth just expanding upon. For instance, that soup is versatile. In what way is soup versatile?
Well, you can use it in so many ways. You can use it as a first course to a dinner party. You can use it as a quick lunch when you're starving and you don't have anything ready to go. You can use it as a dessert. There are some wonderful fruit soups that make a lovely dessert, especially in the summertime when fruit is so yummy. But more than that, it allows for all kinds of adaptations. If you're looking at a soup recipe and it calls for something you don't have, well, you just leave it out, or you use something that's kind of similar and you use that instead. You talked about, you know, leftovers that are just crying out to be combined into a soup. The magic of soup, in my opinion, is you can put anything, absolutely anything, in a soup pot, and it's always going to be wonderful. It's versatile because anybody can do it. That makes it easy. It sort of opens up avenues for all kinds of creativity.
In fact, another item on that little list that I love is soup is forgiving.
Yeah.
And I think what you were saying there is something to the effect that precision of measurements really doesn't matter all that much when it comes to soup, that there is room for, in a sense, miscalculation and happy accidents in soup. It's just something you can work with.
But happy accidents, that's perfect.
You also have some advice in this very same chapter in how to set up one's so-called soup pantry. So in a sense, you could really be poised and ready to create a whole array of wonderful soups. Just give our listeners a couple of quick bits of advice on amply stocking their own soup pantry.
Sure. Well, canned tomatoes, canned beans, which you want to rinse because a lot of them have maybe a little more sodium than you would want in your soup. All kinds of pasta, but the small pastas that would fit in a spoon easily, like, you know, the curves you use for mac and cheese and the little seashells. A good quality chicken or beef or vegetarian stock that, you know, comes in cans in the supermarket. And then your favorite herbs and spices, particularly if you're cooking for vegetarians, you can pump up the flavor by adding some unusual herbs. I've organized the book into four seasons. So in addition to the pantry, most people have in their refrigerator what's fresh that season. So you maybe got a couple of carrots. You got one lemon, you've got a half of a winter squash, anything that's in your refrigerator. So what I like to imagine is somebody opens up the refrigerator, pulls out a couple of things, says, I need a different base, and goes to the pantry and pulls out a can of chopped tomatoes with chili, maybe, and a half a teaspoon of good chicken stock, and there you go, you're on your way.
Mm. I know that one of the hallmarks of the soups that you like to create are indeed those fresh vegetables right out of your wonderful garden. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you maybe have one or two vegetables to which you especially like to turn when it comes to making soup, and maybe one that is might be surprising to the rest of us.
I don't know that it'd be surprising, because we always sort of tend to turn to the familiar with soup. There's absolutely nothing, of course, like homegrown tomatoes. If you have a garden, and I do my gardening in containers because that's the kind of place I live in, and so I always make space to grow a few tomatoes, because there's just absolutely nothing like it. Once you have taste a tomato that was allowed to stay on the plant until it's dead ripe, you won't ever want to buy anything from the supermarket again. So tomatoes, I grow garlic chives, which is a plant that it is related to the regular chives, but it has a little bit of a garlic flavor and a beautiful little white flower. I like to use flowers as garnishes in soups. It takes people by surprise, especially kids. They say, "You mean I can eat that?" I have nasturtiums growing, and I float nasturtium flowers in a soup, especially if it's a green soup like spinach, like a cream of spinach in the springtime, with an orange nasturtium flower or petals floating on top of it.
And then, of course, this book brings before us a whole array of stupendous looking recipes. There's one after another. I'm especially excited to try the ginger chicken soup, which looks wonderful, the asparagus leek chowder, the chicken artichoke soup. And we should mention that your book is not only full of wonderful soup recipes, but you have recipes about other things as well, which can be a lovely enhancement to any meal that involves soup.
Yes, there are 99 soup recipes, and then 40 others, which are pretty evenly divided between salads, breads, and desserts, things that you would eat with soup if you were making a whole supper. And I should also mention, Greg, that the recipes largely came from people who participate in these soup groups around the country. And don't you know, they gave me their very best recipes, so they're quite wonderful. And because they come from different regions, we have different regional specialties represented. We have pozole from Tucson and gumbo from Louisiana and four different kinds of chili, one in every season. And just lots of interesting ethnic twists to certain soups and regional flavors.
It is a wonderful book, start to finish, and it helps us think about soup and maybe appreciate it, because for as lovely as soup is, it's also something that, because of its relative simplicity, we can sometimes take for granted a bit. And I don't think that's possible once we have read your book and thought about the way in which soup could be a different part of our lives. And maybe we could be the part of starting some sort of a soup night of our own. Have you had any sense that your book has been inspiring in that respect?
I have heard from several people who've said, you know, I don't know my neighbors. I wish I did. This is a great way to do it. And if you and I were talking this time next year, Greg, and there were 2,000 soup groups around the country, I could not be happier.
You just sort of have the sense that the world would be a better place somehow.
Absolutely.
If that were true. So when I go home tonight, what would you suggest I turn to for the first recipe to make out of your book?
Well, I'm going to mention one that's a favorite of mine, and it's in my mind because I just made it last night. It's called African peanut soup, which is
wow.
A chicken and rice and tomato base, but then you stir in about a half a cup of peanut butter. When I say that, a couple of people say, really? Because they automatically think of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. It's not that kind of taste at all. It's just, it adds an unusual kind of surprising depth of flavor, and of course adds extra protein. So if you wanted to make a vegetarian version of the soup, it would be very easy to do. It's got a little curry powder in it, so it's got that kind of smokiness. And then this peanut butter that makes people say, what is this I'm tasting? And I try to make them guess, and they can never figure it out.
I just might try that. In the meantime, we direct our listeners to seek out your wonderful book, which is again called Soup Night, Recipes for Creating Community Around a Pot of Soup, and its author, Maggie Stuckey. Maggie Stuckey, I've so enjoyed this. The book is lovely, and I have a strong suspicion it will be an inspiring book for a lot of people. Thank you so much for joining me today on The Morning Show.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.